Certainly appreciate the presence of each one this morning. Unfortunately, exposure to COVID has robbed us of some of our members, as well as some being out of town. But we're glad that you're here. It's unfortunate, in my view, that people have to miss these classes because they're so foundational. But I hope that you benefit from our studies here this morning. All right, we're going to look at our class for this morning. And I'm going to start off with a question. How many of you have a copy of your original birth certificate? No, you don't. What did I ask you?
A copy.
You're right. I apologize. How many of you have your original birth certificate? No, none. Nobody. The original birth certificate is kept with the state records. And you have copies, legitimate copies. But is that copy accepted for identity, for business purposes? It is, isn't it? If it isn't, you wouldn't have any availability to using your birth certificate because you don't have the original. We depend on copies, and we depend on accurate copies. That's the way we live every day. So, you're going to open your songbooks and sing here in our next assembly. You're going to be singing from originals or copies? From copies. But that doesn't deter us in the least, nor do we have question about the accuracy of the copies that we use for worship. So again, it establishes the fact that if we have sufficient, you know, if we were to question, someone was to question whether or not our songs are accurate, if we could find enough copies, sufficient to compare, we could compare all those copies and ascertain whether the ones you have in your book are accurate, couldn't we? So I'm just establishing the fact this is a principle we use every day in our lives, that we use reliable copies. There is an advantage to having copies over just one original. In your birth certificate, in that case, let's suppose the courthouse where your birth certificate is stored burns down. What happened to your original? Gone. So you're not born anymore? You're like the guy in A Wonderful Life, you're nobody? You've got a copy. And maybe somebody else in your family has a copy. And so because the original is gone, doesn't destroy the reality of the event. I've got a scenario on your lesson today that can demonstrate the value of having copies, even over just one original. So here on your lesson, you see Joe Billionaire. That's your relative, isn't it? Joe Billionaire. Joe Billionaire decided to divide his state between 20 people. You are one of them. Joe had his secretary handwrite his will. This was before the days of typewriters and computers. Joe's kind of an older fella. Joe died. The 20 heirs, or yours has a typo there, A-V-E, it's R, are called together for distribution of the estate. The original will was burned up in a fire. However, Joe had his secretary handwrite 20 copies, one for each heir. If one of the heirs says his copy grants him 90% of the estate, you've got 20 heirs, you're all gathered in this room to distribute this man's inheritance, his wealth. One guy says, my copy says I get 90%. you other 19 will have to settle with the 10. How could the other heir check the accuracy of his claim? There's another typo there. I forget, mark out that word songs. The accuracy of his claim. How could the other 19 check the accuracy of his claim? Comparing the copies, right? Let's suppose, however, that Joe Billionaire didn't make 20 copies. Let's suppose he only had the one original and he gave it to this guy. The other 19 have no copies. Now they meet for the distribution of the estate. And this one guy says, I've got the original, and it says I get 90%. What might the other 19 heirs want to do?
Verify.
Say, let's see if this original's been forged, if it's been changed in some way. And if they have a real good forger, it may be hard to detect. But Joe Billionaire was smart enough to make 20 copies. And by having 20 copies, if one person changes it, you can compare it with the other 19. If somebody else changes it, maybe two brothers get together and say, hey, we'll change it. You've got 18 more to compare it against. And what that does is to grant surety, confidence, as to what the will of Joe Billionaire was. And so it sounds like the best thing to do is if we had the original handwritten letters that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John wrote. And that would be very interesting. But we don't. But what we've got are copies. That in no way undermines the credibility of those documents. We recognize that in everyday life. All right. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 17 and verse 18. Deuteronomy chapter 17 and verse 18. Here we are in the Old Testament. No typewriters, no computers, no digital. Talking about the future. So Moses is preaching this sermon. And then it's all going to be written down. First five books. Verse 18, it shall come about when he, that's the king, sits on the throne of his kingdom. He shall write for himself what? A copy. He's the king. Shouldn't he get the original? He doesn't get the original. He shall write for himself a copy of this law in a scroll in the presence of the Levitical priests. So doing it in the presence of the priest helps to ensure accuracy. And then he said, and it shall be with him, and he shall read it. He's the king, but God intends him to read the copy of the law. What is another term we might use to describe that copy of the law that he had in his possession? That's probably not a good question, but let me ask you. A manuscript, that's good. Good answer. If these five books, and you wanted to combine them into one and find a word for five books.
Entity.
A what?
Entity.
Well, your answers are great. I'm looking for the word. What word means book? What?
Bible.
And so essentially he's saying, have a copy of the Bible and read it. Isn't that what this says? So the book of Moses, the five books that he wrote, the king was to have a copy and he was to read it. Now why? That he may learn to fear the Lord his God. But isn't a man just born with that? There's certain innate things we are born with. But God designed a book to be read. that would help us understand why we should fear this God and what that entails. Note, by carefully observing the words of the law and these statutes. Fearing God means you be obedient to His will. What is it? It's in the book, in the copy. And so you can see that in God's plan, copies were used. Look over at Luke chapter 4. I stress this because, as I've said in previous classes on this topic, you may have people who don't have any confidence in the Bible challenge you with the fact that you don't have the originals. You just got copies, as if that in some way undermines the credibility of what you have. It does not. Don't be intimidated by that, what we're trying to show. Look at Luke chapter 4, verse 18. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. So look at verse 17. The book of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him, that's to Jesus. And he opened the book and found the place where it was written, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor, etc. If you compare that with Isaiah, it's not identical to your copy of Isaiah. He was reading from a copy called the Septuagint that was made about 150 to 250 years before Christ. It's actually a translation into another language. Isaiah is Hebrew. The Septuagint is Greek. Isn't that interesting that our Lord, in a synagogue, teaching people, took a copy of the Old Testament and read from it and taught from it? And that's what you have here in Luke chapter 4 and verse 18. All right, we encourage you to look up the word manuscript and look at its origin. What does it mean when you look at the origin of the word? It comes from two words. What are those two words? What do they mean? I've got them on your lesson. What do these two words mean?
Handwritten.
So you got the first part, the M-A-N-U is hand. Then you have the S-C-R-I-P-T-U-S, and that's to write. That's the origin. So when you think about that word, manuscript, script to write, manu by hand, a handwritten document. Now, words are like rivers. Rivers change, words change, and manuscript came to have a wider signification. In the age of typewriters, it came to indicate the original typewritten document that a writer might submit to his publisher. It wasn't handwritten. It came to embrace a larger field of meaning. So, we're not saying that every time you see that word, you have to think of a handwritten document. Because later, the word had some other significations. But when you talk about the manuscripts that support these four books that we're studying, that's what they are. Handwritten documents. Okay, now, on the second page of your lesson, I've got a copy of two manuscripts. When you see MSS, that stands for manuscript. These are actually available. They're stored. Like this first one here, we have this Alexandrian manuscript. Now look at it. Now your copy is not the greatest, again. But try to imagine reading that, even if you knew Greek. Look at the bottom one, the Sinaitic, the top one's the Sinaitic, and the bottom one's the Alexandrian. Imagine trying to read that. There are no spaces. There's no punctuation, like periods and semicolons. There's no capitals and smaller letters. There's no verses. Imagine trying to read that. But wait, imagine trying to copy that accurately. Not miss a letter. Know which words, which letter divide into a word, not getting some other letters in that word. Trying to copy that. This is a copy, but it's a copy of something behind it. And so you imagine the originals, we don't have them, but they were written in Greek. But here we have these copies. Now, what we've done an exercise for our class. Somebody said, well, we don't have the original. So how do we know that we've got reliable copies? So what I did, I asked a number of people, 9 people participated in this exercise that I've given you a copy of. Does everybody have that sheet that I handed out? Does anybody not have it? Okay, on that sheet that I handed out, yeah, there's one fellow that doesn't have it. On this sheet that I handed out, you see that nice writing at the top. That's manuscript. This is taken from some notes I had on a lesson I presented. Now, in my copy, I use an app that I can actually take a pen and write on that app. On my copy, there's more spacing and stuff. But I was able to take parts of that lesson and put them together to try to simulate in some way the idea of reading one of these manuscripts like you have a picture of in your lesson. You can see this is just a short paragraph. And so I asked 9 people, I asked these people to participate, and they did, and I want to thank each and every one of you for doing it. And so what I asked these people to do was to copy this manuscript, and I asked them to just write it through one time. Don't get anybody to proofread it, just one time through. Handwrite your copy. And so that's what they did. Now, let's suppose you didn't have that top part. I know you treasure that top part, but let's suppose you didn't have it. Say you don't have the original. All you have are the copies. So on the left side of your sheet, I've got the copies compared with the original in several points. For example, on the original, I know you can figure that out by looking at the top. It's R-E-S-O-N-A-U-T, which is misspelled, by the way. But in any case, that's on the original. But now, on 4 copies, they didn't spell it like the original. They instead put reason out. Now, why do you reckon they did that? That's right. They figure I didn't spell it right. They're trying to make sense of it. They're correcting what they think is an error. Now, when you look at the paragraph, reason out doesn't make any sense, however. So you say, something must be wrong here. Well, you've got 4 that have R-E-S-O-N-A-U-T. So we've got 4 and 4. Then we got 1 that's R-E-S-O-N-A-T-E, which is a verb form. Again, probably trying to correct the spelling. But now, if you did not have that original and you had these 9 copies, could you make a pretty good guess of what the original was? And I'd say, I'm not sure, but reason out really doesn't make any sense with the paragraph. Resonate, maybe. But again, that's a verb, and you read the paragraph, that doesn't seem to fit. And so maybe the author just misspelled it. That's what happened. In this case, me, the author. Okay? So, that one you may have some question marks about, but you can kind of go through and reason. Well, then, I have here, up on the original, I had the word stature, question mark. But you'll note one copy, again, trying to figure out what in the world this all meant, said, is that stature? They added some words. You see over on the right is the original. Is that is not even there. Turn with me to Revelation 22. When this letter was read to the seven churches, if that church then wanted a copy, because it's got to go to the next church, and the next church, if that church wanted a copy, what would they have to do? They'd have to handwrite a copy, wouldn't they? So they're going through the book of Revelation. Do you ever have trouble with some of the things in Revelation, figuring out what they mean? So maybe the copyist said, I don't know what John meant here. I think I can clarify this. I'll just add a word or two. Or maybe he meant another word and just misspelled it. I'll change it. But look at this statement over here in Revelation 22, verse 18. I testify to everyone who hears the words of the prophecy of this book. If anyone adds to them, God shall add to him the plagues which are written in this book. If anyone takes away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God will take away his part from the tree of life, from the holy city which are written in this book. Don't add. Don't take away. Just copy it like it's written. And if you try to interpret and apply it, stay with what's written. The scribes who copied the Old Testament were very meticulous about that. They would count the letters. They would count the middle word. They were very meticulous in trying to make accurate copies. So much so that our Old Testament copies, before the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, the earliest copies we had were 900 AD, I believe it was, when the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, which are previous to our common era. It was amazing how they compared with the copies very well. In other words, they did a good job. But you can see the meticulous care that would be given. So I told the people that copied this, don't spend much time on it. I needed it back. There's a time element. Told them only to just write it and forget it. But if these people who were copying the Bible text, they'd probably read it and reread it and reread it, have another scribe read it. They had no time deal they had to meet. Thus, they could do a lot better job, you see. Damien, would you get that and bring one back there to Alex, please? Okay. Note the third thing down. Specificality. That's on one copy. You say, well, I don't know if that's correct or not. But eight copies had the word spelled correctly. Would you be able to say, well, this was just a mistake. Here's what the original was. Would you feel confident in that? I skipped one, didn't I? One copy had some and then things. Separated it into two words. But you'll note the other eight copies put it in one word. Now, why did they put it in two words? Maybe, I don't know, the thinking of the person who did it. But maybe because if you look at the original right at the very top, the word something's all in capitals. And maybe they were trying to figure out, what does he mean by this? Maybe he meant something. But either way, you see that you could take the other eight and correct it. All right, here's another one. Here's one, two, three copies that had one discerning factor. One had that. One said can discern facts. And one had calm discerning factors. But six, you say, I don't know which is correct. You got three. They don't all say the same thing. But you got six in unity that says can discern factors. What would you choose? What would you feel confident in? Was the original of six in unity say it can discern factors? And three differ with one another as to what the original was. Then you have the same thing on this next one. You have two that says about Jesus' teaching. One that says about, I don't know, I guess they couldn't figure out my writing because I can't figure out theirs. But I tried to copy what they wrote. And then one that says about, and the J is with a period, Jesus, featured. The original, I didn't spell out Jesus. My notes are often very brief. Holy Spirit, maybe HS. Jesus, maybe J or JC. A lot of abbreviations. But here's the original, about J period teaching. So somebody comes along and says, well, I think I know what he means on two of these copies. That's about Jesus' teaching. Well, that's what I meant, but that's not what the original said. So you got these four over on this side. You got two, one, one. They don't agree, but you've got a unity on the other side of five. And you can just go down this sheet and see the same thing over and over again. Go down to the one on amazement. You have four copies. I couldn't read my clear writing on amazement. And so they misspelled the word. And over on the other side, amazement. Now, when you look up at the original up there, it's a third line down, second word. You can see how clear that is. But anyway, so you can see what happens in copies. And I was going through this thing, and I didn't even begin to get them all. But I got enough to hopefully show what happens. And you can look at this on your own time if you wish. But turn your page over. Here's what I told the people. One time through when copying, don't have somebody proofread it. There's a time factor. Get it back to me in a week or so. In contrast, the scribes were very meticulous. All right. Now, we have done nine copies, and with nine copies, we could pretty well recreate the original if you didn't have it. You see that? With just nine copies. Okay. Most everybody knows this, but in case you don't, this is a ream of paper. This is how it comes when you buy it. How many in this, Lil? You don't know? You don't buy the paper for your business, all right? 500. There's 500 sheets in here. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I thought you did. Okay. There's 500 sheets in here. Okay. You see this box? There's 10 rings. You buy a carton of paper. How many copies? How many sheets? We got more copies of the manuscripts and the pages in this box. I did with nine copies. Imagine if you had over 5,000 copies to try to recreate the original. And these are single pages. When I say 5,000 copies, the copies may have several pages. I said, well, I don't know how you can know what the original is. Yes, you do. They're either dishonest or they don't know what they're talking about. There's abundant manuscripts, handwritten copies. And I tell you what this exercise did for me, it made me appreciate those people even more. I don't know how many hours I spent on this little old thing, going back for each copy, trying to compare. Imagine doing that on these manuscripts, like I've given you pictures of. Doing it on a whole book or on the whole Bible. How tedious that must be. And yet that's what we have. And so when we're talking about the story of Jesus, we've talked about in our first class, we have four documents. A document's a writing that documents an event or something. We've got four of them. And they tell the story of Jesus. And so we need to know, it would help us to know at least when they were written. Were they written 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago? We talked about that in our second class, how we could know when they were written. And that they can be traced back to the first century. The second thing now we're talking about is how reliable are the copies. They're copies. Your Bible is a copy. But how reliable is the copy? Now, today, what helps make our copies much more accurate? If your Bible comes out in a later edition, what makes it pretty sure they're going to be almost identical? That's not hard.
Mass production.
Yeah, well, mechanical. It's all digital. It's mechanical, right? So they just take it, scan it, or whatever they do, and reprint it. Like you say, mass production. But they didn't have that back then. They had manuscripts. And so that's the kind of thing they were dealing with, but that in no way undermines the credibility of our Bible. Look at the, and I put on the right-hand side, there's other errors in these nine copies. I just didn't get to them all. And variations in the copies indicate they are not reproductions of the same document. In other words, let's suppose I gave this to nine people. When I got it back, every one of the nine copies had the identical error. What would that tell you?
The original had the error.
Huh?
The original had the error.
That what?
So if the nine copies had the same identical error, wouldn't the original have had that same error?
Well, it didn't guarantee it in the copies. The original had things they didn't put in the copies.
The nine copies were written by one person.
That's it. That this was a collusion. That they didn't all do it separately. That they got together and said, hey, the variation, instead of undermining the credibility that these are genuine copies written by Joe and Bob and Tom and Sue or whoever it may be, testify to the fact that different people looked at that original and made these copies. Now look at this quote that I have at the bottom. Fenton John Anthony Hart, whose life work has been with the manuscript, said the amount of what can in any sense be called substantial variation is but a small fraction of the whole residuary variation and can hardly form more than a thousandth part of the entire text. That quote has been repeated over and over again by fellows who are still studying manuscripts. So evidently it's a valid observation. He was a scholar. In the manuscripts, he sat on the English Revised Version of the 1880s. And so, 1,000. I had a New Testament, and it has, so I got it at home. And I just calculated what 1,000th of it would be. It would be less than half a page of any variant that would amount to anything. Not that there's not a lot more variances, but that would amount to anything. Look at this next quote. This is from a much more recent book. This book was published in 1986. What can we conclude from the evidence? He's been going through all the evidence for the manuscripts. He said, virtually all of the 400,000 differences in the New Testament documents, spelling errors, inverted words, non-Bible variants and the like, are completely inconsequential to the task restructuring the original. Of the remaining differences, virtually all yield to a vigorous application of the accepted canons of textual criticism. This means, listen to this. I said, well, there's 400,000 variants. But wait, listen to this. This means that the New Testament is over 99% pure. In the entire text of 20,000 lines, only 40 lines are in doubt, about 400 words. And none of this affects any significant doctrine. So, are you going to find quote-unquote scholars that say you can't depend on the Bible? You are. But I'll tell you, there's another side to the story. If you want to learn more about this field, there's a number of very valuable books that you can buy. Some of them you can access on the web. Evidence That Demands a Verdict by Josh McDowell, the one I just talked about. General Introduction Bible by Geisler and Nix. And there's others, plenty of others. And so if you ever have a question or you have somebody you're talking to that has that question, equip yourself. And your faith will not be weakened, it'll be stronger. Now look at this chart you have in your lesson. Has anybody in this audience ever studied Homer or any of these other guys, Plato or Tacitus, in school? Okay, there's one hand, two hands, three, four, five. You studied this in college? Did the professor say, well, we're not sure about what he wrote? Did that ever come up? No. But look at Homer, wrote the Iliad. He wrote it about 800 years before Christ. The earliest copy, remember we looked at in our last class that some of the copies date within 50 to 100 years of the original. The earliest copy, 400 B.C., 400-year gap, how many copies? 643. But nobody ever questioned it. Look at this next one. Book of History. The date it was written. The earliest copy. Look at the time gap. 1,350 years from the earliest copy to the original. And there's only 8 copies. Anybody ever questioned it? Look again. The next one. You can just go down this chart. Till you get down to the New Testament. Look down on the bottom line. It was written 50 to 100 A.D. Earliest copies. We've talked about this in our last class. 114, 200, 250, 325 A.D. So what's the time gap comparatively? 50 years, 100 years, 150 years, 225 years. How many? This is out of date, by the way. It's 5,366. I think it's over 5,800 copies now. Imagine that. And yet we're going to question the New Testament documents and teach our students in college Homer? Really? And have them read Plato? You know what that points to? Either one or two things. Ignorance or absolute prejudice and dishonesty. The documents you hold in your hand are reliable. So, this is what we hope that we are establishing in our study today. So these four documents that you hold in your hand contain the testimony of people who lived in the time of Jesus. These men wrote about people who, well, first of all, wrote about Jesus. What did he say about himself? What did he really claim anyway? And then there were people who were uniquely involved with Jesus. Like there was a man whose whole mission in life was to proclaim Jesus. His name was John the Baptist. What did he say about him? And then there were people who came to follow this man. We call them disciples. What did they say about him? What was it that they said that maybe influenced them to say, I'm going to be his follower? But there's also just people. Common people in the community. People in high position. People who did not follow him. What did they say? So, you know what we're going to do? We're going to put you in the jury box. And we're going to start calling the witnesses. You're in the jury box. It's going to be your job to listen to what the witnesses say and reach a verdict as to the innocence or guilt of the man on trial, which is Jesus. And Lord willing, we'll begin that in our study next week as we talk about Jesus' human testimony. Jesus' own claims. So I say next week, next class, Wednesday night, we'll start with that. Thank you for your good attention this morning, and thank you again for the participation, those of you who did the exercise that I gave out.